so. The tears that slipped past his scarred fists were tears of shame and rage. Through his tears, Val could see the angry mob that blocked the path of the Buffalo team bus. He saw the spider web splintering of the front windshield, the result of a hurled beer bottle. And he heard the shouted demands of the mob. Send out the nigger!
Chapter 1. Slowly, very slowly, I lifted my bruised backside off the ice, keeping one eye on the half-dozen entrances to the hockey rink. I knew that Timber, the family dog, was somewhere out there in the empty arena, awaiting his chance to again knock me off my skates. The way I figured, if I could learn to skate despite being repeatedly torpedoed by a burly Doberman pincher charging out of the darkness, then the checks of opposing hockey players would have no chance of stopping me. As every new skater quickly learns, I knew that I needed to keep my feet perfectly straight because the slightest shift in my weight would send my skate shooting out in different directions while my rear end went straight down. And I surely didn't need any help getting there from Timber. Hearing nothing coming from the empty seating area, my attention shifted away from kamikaze canines and back to the task of standing upright on the narrow strips of sharpened steel strapped to my feet. The leather ice skates were a present from my dad. I wasn't supposed to get them until my birthday, which fell on Valentine's Day, the day that gave me my name, as suggested by my Aunt Maxine. But my old man couldn't wait to see me on the ice, so he turned over the skates to me as a Christmas present. Actually, it was even before Christmas, but he knew I had to make up for lost time. Though not yet 13, I was indeed late getting onto the ice for the first time. Starting younger would have made my stumbles and spills more expected and less humorous to onlookers. It would also have meant a shorter falling distance than the 6+ feet that already separated the top of my head from the frozen surface beneath my wobbly feet. There was nothing I could do at this point about the late start, or the countless falls, but at least I was able to collect my beginner bruises in privacy. By this time, my dad was the operations manager for the Long Island Arena. His jack-of-all-trades position gave him around-the-clock access to its full-sized ice hockey rink. It was here, surrounded only by several thousand empty seats, that I lifted myself off the ice and back onto my skates. Again, and again, and again. Almost a decade earlier, Henry James had moved our family from Ocala, Florida, to what was then the still-sleepy New York City exurb of Suffolk County. Henry and his wife, Pernella, my mom, believed there was more opportunity for their young family in New York than there was in Florida. At that time, during the early days of the Kennedy administration, Ocala was the Deep South, and sadly, Jim Crow was still alive and well. My dad's childhood dream of using his considerable football talents to further his education were dashed when my mom became pregnant with me, the first of what would be 6 children for my folks. In an instant, the pigskin plans of my dad's youth became a lifelong question of what could have been. With hungry mouths to feed, Henry did not hesitate to use his brawn to bring home a paycheck, but a life up north offered a better opportunity for him to be the last of his line to depend solely on the strength of his back to earn a living. So he and my mom gathered their few belongings and packed up me and my baby sisters, Vernice and Rosemary. Henry Jr., Mary Ann, and Bobby Lee were still just twinkles in my daddy's eye. And off we went. At the outset, the move to New York changed little more than the weather conditions under which my father toiled, and not for the better. He had traded working in the sugarcane fields and block ice houses of Central Florida for equally hard labor on the farms that still filled vast swaths of Long Island. Everyone in the family had to pitch in, so I had also spent some summer days working in the same fields alongside migrant workers whose languages I didn't understand and who were gone once the last crop of tomatoes or potatoes were picked. I was 10 years old before our home on Long Island had electricity or running water. That my folks saw this as an improvement over the quality of life they had down south